welcome back to Community Connections. And I'm Alan Collier, and I'm with you for the next hour. And of course, we've got, being the first Wednesday, I was doing it same month, I don't know why I say that, the first Wednesday of the month, we've got our private investigator, Peter, with us. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you for having me, Alan.
Always a great time. We're always a great time with you, Peter. Peter, we left you, we had a question last time, and we've got another couple of questions today, one to leave you with as well. But it was regarding if somebody brought, I can't remember what the case was, brought to you, how you would go about building your case without giving away your trade secrets.
Yeah, so I think it was in a, sounding like a manufacturer or perhaps a retail environment.
Yeah, that was it, yep.
Yeah, so look, I mean, the easiest thing to say is probably ring and have a conversation. Generally, I'm happy to chat for half an hour to an hour to get a bit of a feel for what the situation might be.
Yep.
And there'd be no charge for that. And basically then from then you develop a strategy as to how you might want to confirm probably and then look at solving the, whatever the situation is. I have to be fairly broad because I don't know a lot about it. But,
yep.
Yeah, look, I think that's probably the best way to go. And obviously there's strategies in place and can also be quite sensitive too, Alan. It could be a family business or it could be, you know, you don't know how high the corruption is or how rotten the apple is. So sometimes you might have to have some sensitive conversations away from the premises.
Yep.
Which cannot be organised, yeah.
Oh, I knew one where the son-in-law was ripping his mother-in-law off, which is pretty disgraceful. Peter, though, do you ever have to go, I'd call it undercover, but that's not, would a company ever put you in and say, look, I need you to work in this business for the next 2 months so that you can observe what's going on, or is that not the way a private investigator works?
Look, it's a possibility. Obviously, it would have to be something within my skill set. So, and you'd have to be age appropriate and experienced appropriate and things like that. One of the things I have done in the past on a few occasions is I've actually walked through a factory or a business premises on the pretext of sort of an insurance in assessment type scenario, which gives you the opportunity to have a look at the get a feel for what the processes are and where the shortfalls might be. And also at the same time, you probably are looking at, you know, risks as in slip and fall risks and things like that at the same time.
Yeah. Peter, and we should mention the name of your organisation is Absolute Facts because that's, we need to give you the credit for that's who you work for. Peter, in these, when you get, I think you call them slippage. I think that's the word you use. If it's a case of whether it be a factory or a shop, well, I guess, no, let's take the factory first because I think you'll have two different answers. Is it more likely that fraud is being caused by an employee or by an outside person?
Okay, so shrinkage is the term that we use. So shrinkage and it probably depends on the type of environment, factory in particular, what's being produced, the value of what's being produced, the previous stance in towards workers within the factory being able to take product home. And I think we've touched on this before, that in a family business that's possibly grown and grown in the initial stages, if someone wants to take home a handful of widgets, no one really cares too much about it. But if that becomes sort of standard practice and then the volume of what's actually being taken is getting bigger and bigger, it can actually then affect sales in that the product that's taken home by employees is actually then on the market competing with the actual sales. So
Peter, with your experience now, we'll talk about just your experience. We'll tell you in the retail environment, because I believe you might do a bit of work in that. I don't want to know too much about that. Would most of those be by the public or would be more of them the people that work for the shop taking stuff?
Yeah, sure. I think the most concerning would be the organised crime aspect where they're people that are basically going around day in, day out trying to relieve people of their goods.
Yep.
So that would be the biggest concern. There's always a component of employee as well, but I think generally they'll get caught out over time anyway.
Yep.
It's probably more the organised stuff that really can damage your bottom line. Yeah.
Peter, and again, I'm talking about your experience, and we'll talk in the retail. In that sort of instance that you're just talking, where their group, where there's a bit of a gang or a group or whatever they might be, would they tend to be more in, how will I put this? Would they, you say they do it every day, would they tend to say, well, no, I don't want to pick out an area, but would they go to one area and then do that today and maybe the next area tomorrow and next door and that? Or do they jump all over Melbourne, like one, they're north of Melbourne one day and out in the western suburbs another? Do you know, have you got any idea as to how that works?
Yeah, look, there can be some analytics available and, look, the short answer is they could go anywhere over Melbourne, if not Victoria, whether that's for their work or whether that's just to go to a different location and try the same thing at a different location and possibly get away with it one or two occasions before, you know, they're sort of suspected of being up to no good. And there's also trends in respect to time of day, perhaps someone on their way to work or a job site or equally on their way home from work or a job site, they might tend to hit at certain times of the day. And, you know, perhaps the last port of call could be the nearest store to possibly where they're living. So
is that only if it's more a single person though than a gang, or is that?
Yeah, that would be more the case of a single person that's travelling around day in, day out, trying to extricate goods without paying for them. The organised gangs, organised crime, they could be anywhere, anytime, hitting pretty much any retailer. So they'll have their methodology of how they do it and what they get up to, and they have, you know, potentially have a shopping list of specific items that they're after.
Do they?
And there could also be an element, I think we've touched on this before as well, is that they tend to use underage people to do it, or children basically, because if they get caught, then it's very difficult for them to be prosecuted. So
it's the old Fagan trick, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, correct.
Peter, I've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Sure. I took my troubles down to Madam Rue. You know that gypsy with the gold cap too. She's got a bag down a pretty port and vine, selling little bottles of love potion number 9. I told her that I was a flop with chicks. I've been this way since 1956. She looked at my palm and she made sign. She said what you need is love potion number 9. She bent down and turned around and gave me a wink. She said I'm gonna make it up right here in the sink. It smelled like turpentine and looked like Indian ink. I held my nose, I closed my eyes, I took a drink.
Right back into the 1960s, the Searchers with Love Potion number 9. We've tried to cover a few of the decades today, the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and we've actually got a Pink Floyd coming up at the end of the day for Peter. I know Peter likes Pink Floyd. Peter, bullying in the workplace, is it, I think you were saying that that's on the up, is it?
Yeah, so there's been some recent publicity with the headline sort of comment being that nearly half of Australian employees have experienced some form of workplace bullying during their lives in the workplace.
That's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the thing from an employer's perspective is that under the both the OH&S Act and the Fair Work Act, it's actually their legal responsibility to ensure your employee's psychological and or mental safety, which is quite a concern if you're basically turning a blind eye or letting bullying happen in your workplace. You could finish up in a little bit of trouble.
Because years ago, they more or less just said, oh, toughen up, didn't they? But you know, if you're talking to a boss, they just say, oh, just toughen up. But those days are long gone, aren't they?
Yeah, I think either toughen up or leave would be the probably a few years back. But fortunately or unfortunately now, the consequences could be a little bit more dire if you ignore or condone or let bullying happen within your workplace.
Because some of these things carry pretty heavy penalties against the employer if they don't do something, don't they?
Absolutely. If they're aware of it and they turn a blind eye or don't respond, then, the potential for liability is probably getting greater and greater.
Peter, also sexual assaults, that goes along with the... But when we talk about sexual assaults, and I'm going to ask you the question, obviously the women are the ones that are the most at risk, but there's also sexual assaults against guys as well, isn't there, in the marketplace, in the workforce?
Well, not only in the workforce, just in the general environment. So the Australian Bureau of Statistics put out a stat saying that almost 90 people a day were sexually assaulted around Australia.
90?
I know you're going to ask me the breakup between male and female, and I don't actually know that, or it wasn't reported.
You know me too well, Peter.
However, the key points that came out of it were females aged between 15 and 19 were the most at risk of sexual assault. Probably unsurprisingly, males of that age were most likely to be the perpetrators.
Yep.
Interestingly, most offences occurred in private homes and most victims knew their attacker. And it's believed that the pandemic and lockdowns have contributed to the increase.
Peter, when you say it's in their own homes, is it normally by a partner or is it just somebody that they've invited their own home? Do you know?
Look, I think, the partner one I'm not so sure about. Again, they haven't been that specific. I suppose if we go back and do some homework on it, if you're interested, I'll come out with a bit more
depth for you. I think that would be interesting because I know that, you know, we talk about sexual assault in the house and we're certainly not putting it down, but I'm just wondering how many are by partners or just ladies who invite people in for various reasons and wind up getting assaulted.
Yeah, I think possibly family members could be an element of that as well as opposed to partners. So, to be honest with you, I don't know the answer, but I'm happy to... do a little bit more homework on that one if you'd like.
Yeah, that'd be terrific. Sexual assault years ago, the police and nobody really put a big big effort into it, did it? Again, it was a bit of a case, maybe they asked for it, maybe this. And, you know, there was all sorts of excuses made. But now I know the police in particular are very, very conscious of sexual assaults in the home or anywhere.
Yeah, and I think if it's, as it's reported here, it's a new crime rate record. So obviously that's setting off some bells within the police, enforcement environment, yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I find incredible, you would have to think that a person should be, whether it be male or female, because I know of a guy that was not so much sexually assaulted, but assaulted in his own home many a time by his partner. But anybody should be safe in their own home, shouldn't they?
Oh, you'd like to think so, wouldn't you? But that's clearly not the case these days. I mean, there's so many cases coming up with, you know, break-ins, and you always wonder whether there's a reason for that. But I think there's also an element of randomness now, which is getting even more concerning. You know, people take a liking to your car and break into your house to get the car keys to take the car, and, you know, that's starting to be something that happens.
And the worst part about that, and I was only talking to someone the other day about this, once upon a time, well, they could get into the cars anyway because they were pretty easy to start. You didn't need to go inside and get the keys. But the problem is now that when they come in, they don't just grab the keys and run out. They generally start hitting people with bats and all sorts of stuff before they grab the keys, isn't it?
Yeah, and it could be the element that they could well be affected by ice or something along those lines, which makes them, you know, that little bit more aggressive and also very single-minded to achieve whatever outcome they've decided they want to achieve.
And somebody told me, and I presume this is true, is that they don't... So if you're on ice and some of those things, you don't understand there can be consequences.
No, I think their inhibitions are obviously blocked. And as I mentioned also, my understanding is that there's an element of this single-minded or single focus that they're determined that they want to achieve something, whatever that might be, and they will go to basically any measures to achieve that outcome.
And it doesn't matter if you get in the way.
No, if you get in the way, you're probably better off getting out of the way.
Yeah. All right, Peter, just another quick break and we'll be back with more.
I was born in the wagon of a traveling show. My mama used to dance for the money they throw. Mama would do whatever he could. Preach a little gospel. Just saw the mobile, gave him a ride, filled him with a hot meal. I was 16, he was 21. Rode with us to Memphis, and Papa would have shot him if he knew what he'd done. Down. Never had schooling, but it taught me well with its smooth Southern style. 3 months later, I'm a gal in trouble, and I haven't seen him for a while. Oh, I haven't seen him for a while. She was born in the wagon of a traveling show. Her mama had to dance for the money they throw. Grandpa do whatever he could. Preach a little gospel. Sell a couple bottles of Dr. Good.
That's going back to the 1970s, and sure, and gypsies, tramps and thieves. We're not talking about gypsies, tramps and thieves, although we were talking about thieving before, but I've got Peter from Absolute Facts and we're talking about all things to do with investigations. Peter, you were saying it's Child Protection Week this week.
Yeah, so the 4th to the 10th of September, so we're right in the middle of National Child Protection Week.
Yep.
And obviously that can be relevant to what I do in that at times historically in that I might be monitoring access visits and things like that to look at general care and potential neglect and things along those lines. So there is a website. It's napcan.org.au. So that's N for November, A for Alpha, B for Papa, C for Charlie, A for Alpha, N for November again, .org.au, where you can get some helpful tips and hints and referrals to other sites and that. And I brought that up again, as I mentioned, I have in the past done monitored access visits where more often than not it's the father having access for perhaps a night or a weekend, or although custody at the moment is quite often week on, week off, more often the case now. Mm. And there's been things, for example, things like the child coming back just really, really tired and distressed, you know, coming back with nappy rash and things along those lines. And I did have one case where the father had the child, and they were down. It was quite a hot day, and they were down at a park in Mornington, and the child's running around without a hat and no apparent sunscreen, and getting, you know, getting quite exposed to a pretty hot weather in direct sunlight, to the point that the mother actually came down and picked the child up. So she was getting quite distressed with my reports.
I was going to say, so Peter, you were, I just want to tease that out a little bit. You were actually in the park. Do you have to take the child down or?
No. I was monitoring from afar.
Yep.
And basically, you know, got to that location, and there was the other element that came into that too was the dehydration aspect that the child wasn't being given any water or any drinks of any description, you know, for I think we were into about hour three, at which point the mother had had enough and she basically just turned up and grabbed the child back. As I understand it, there was an element of sunburn and things like that to be dealt with in the next few days, and dehydration in general. So yeah, it's like a welfare monitoring, wellbeing type thing.
Do you do that very often, Peter?
No, not too often. That's a particular case. So it's probably around about 20 years ago, off the top of my head. So it is a while back. I don't get too many of them, but yeah, they can be a little bit distressing for me as well, but more so for the parent, of course.
Parents. Peter, would a private investigator ever be on a situation where it's the father or is getting the child for? But the mother doesn't want to be involved at all, where a private investigator would pick the child up and or at least stand there and watch the changeover. Would that be a private investigator's job?
Certainly not directly involved with the handover or the changeover. But, yes, look, a fly on the wall, it could be at perhaps the local police station, or it could be at a McDonald's or something along those lines. And there can be, there can be some terse exchanges that take place between the parents at those handovers. Definitely, yes. So there might be an element of trying to monitor that or record or report on that, whether perhaps the mother or indeed the father could be feeling unsafe at the point of the handover, and things can escalate, and even though it may well be a public place, that there's some some spite comes across between the two of them, and things can escalate from there.
It amazes me that people can be so much in love that they get married, they have children, and like that's a glorious time of their life, and it can turn into so much hate down. I can't quite understand that. I don't quite understand how you can go from love to hate. I mean, maybe they've been cheated on and all that, but I just don't understand how that can happen.
No. Well, I think there can be very much an element of, tit for tat and trying to press people's buttons and things along those lines. So, unfortunately, clearly things can deteriorate, and it really can turn into a nasty situation, and of course in front of not only the general public but the child or children themselves.
And that doesn't do either side any good, does it? I mean, the child must think, well, what the devil's going on here?
Yeah, it can be. I could imagine it being quite stressful for all parties, and even innocent bystanders that are watching a situation they really don't want to either witness or certainly not get involved in or interfere in, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? got to take another quick break and we'll be back, Peter. We're going to talk about Stop It.
Yes, we are.
Goodbye, Norma Jean. Though I never knew you at all. You had the grace to hold yourself while those around you crawled. They crawled out of the woodwork and they whispered into your brain. They set you on the treadmill and they made you change your name. Your life like a candle in the wind, never knowing who to cling to when the rain set in. And I would have liked to know you, but I was just a kid. Your candle burned out long before your legend ever did.
John and Candle in the Wind. It was supposed to be a song about Diana, I think, and I think it was 20 years ago, wasn't it, or 25 years ago last week that she was killed. I just can't remember if it was 20 or 25. It's gone very quickly. Anyway, Peter, Stop It. What's that about?
Yes, apart from what my wife says to me quite often.
You're not in that by yourself.
No. It was actually an app that was released by Victoria Police back in July, and it was for people to report non-urgent poor behaviour, bad behaviour, particularly of a sexual inappropriateness on public transport. So initially, I think it was aimed at the train network, more or less, but then they have extended it out to the tram and bus network, basically public transport as a whole. And there's a text number that's been advertised. I'll read that out if you yep. like. It's 0499 455 455. And what it is if someone's acting inappropriately on public transport, particularly of a sexual type nature or bullying or harassment in general, then you can make a report to that text number, and perhaps at the same time you might be able to grab a happy snap of the person that's being a bit of a nuisance. And then quite recently the Victoria Police announced that they'd actually had their first conviction as a result of a report made through that app. So they're quite pleased about that, as you'd expect.
Yep.
They had the wording was landmark arrest by Victoria Police as man jailed over a spate of sex acts on trains after a woman used the Stop It app to report him performing an explicit sexual act beside her on a train. I think it might have been to Ballarat or something. True. Off the top of my head. So, yeah, that's a pretty good initiative by Victoria Police. And obviously, if it's of a more of an urgent nature, or you feel physically threatened, then you'd call Triple O, presumably. But this is more of something that, someone's acting a little bit off or whatever, or doing something inappropriate. You send a text and you can attach pictures, obviously, if that's without putting yourself at risk. Mm. And then they can follow it up down the track.
Well, it's just terrific, because you don't actually want to make a phone call and say the person beside me is doing such and such, because you might get a belt over there too, mind you.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a discreet reporting method that's obviously, again, they're reiterating it's not urgent. They don't deal with it necessarily immediately, but they get around to looking through it. And I guess I'd say by this case, in this particular case, I suspect there might have been, almost half a dozen reports, and they matched it up as the same person and were able to, basically effect a prosecution and a conviction from that.
There's some people do some stupid things out there, aren't they?
Yeah, look, and I think these days with phones and cameras and phones with cameras and things like that, you get away with a lot less. And CCTV in general is getting, once the switch was made from analog to digital,
yep.
The quality of CCTV footage is coming along in leaps and bounds.
Peter, have you ever used CCTV as part of a case where you've gone to someone and said, I think X happened here, and did they hand it over to you easily?
No, I haven't. I have viewed CCTV footage in respect to retail theft.
Right.
But I think in that case, if you were looking around the area and you saw a camera, I suspect you'd have to ask police to follow that up and ask the camera owner or operator to pass on the footage or burn the footage or provide the footage in some format.
This is a bit unfair to ask you, but I'm going to ask you just the same. Peter, yep. do the people have to hand it over, or do the police have to get a court order if they knew something happened in that area and you said, oh, no, I don't think I'll hand it over? Can the police demand it, or would they have to get a court order to get it? Do you know?
I suspect they'd have to get a warrant to, if the person was not cooperating, they'd probably have to get a warrant, but you'd have to wonder why they wouldn't want to cooperate.
Oh, I was just going to say that. You'd really have to wonder what they themselves had to hide, wouldn't you?
Yeah, although I suppose from another perspective is if you flip it around, there could be a liability aspect if something's occurred perhaps on their premises or something like that that could lead to legal action. Yeah. There could also be some privacy concerns if they're recording something that's, perhaps it's the other side of the road or something like that. They could have the concerns about that.
Yeah.
So there are some considerations that you might want to take in place. But the Privacy Act's reasonably clear is that it's where the origin of the footage is whether it's a breach of privacy or not. Right. So yeah,
Peter. I've got to leave at about 5:02, as we know, to let Greg in. So I've put up a Pink Floyd, because I know you like Pink Floyd. But I'd like you to write this down, if you could, please, Peter, and we'll follow this one up next month. You'll know the answer, but I don't actually want it today.
Okay.
Peter, I had a phone call this morning from somebody who was in one of the major chain stores. that's all we're going to go. Well, I don't want to go any further. It was a chain store. The person was, there was two guys walking in the front door. They got in the front door a few feet and somebody called the manager, and the manager and a couple of others came down and said to one of those guys, "Are you not allowed in this joint? You've got to get out." And a bit of a argy-bargy went on, but in the end they threw him out. They said to the first person that was there, "Yeah, you're allowed in," and the other bloke went out. And he said, "Oh, well, I was in here yesterday." And I said, "Yeah, but you're buying something and all that." And the person wasn't – well, the person that rang me actually saw it. The question they're going to ask you is, a lot of these chains said they turned off this face recognition. What the person's asking, because, well, A, do you think the chains have told a bit of a porky that they haven't actually turned them off? Or do you know, obviously the person who thought the idea of the face recognition in their stores thought it was a good idea, and I don't have any objection to it because I'm not going to go and steal, so I couldn't care less. Do you know whether they've done away with that, turned it off, but all of a sudden there's something else that can, in some other way, that they can identify a person that's walking in the store that shouldn't be there?
Look, I think you'd have to trust the major retailers that had the facial recognition. I suspect it would be turned off, because I think the consequences of being caught otherwise or found out otherwise wouldn't be worth the publicity. So
could you just look at that for us and see what other avenues the retailers do have in how something like that would happen?
I think it'd probably be more of a case of familiarisation with the person that's coming to the store, and if they do have a notice against them to say that they're banned from the store, and they've been handed a document to say you're banned from entering our store for whatever reason.
Yep.
And I think I might be wrong here, but I would have thought the bottom line is that there is a right to refuse entry on the part of the retailer.
Could you have a look at that for next month?
I can.
And also maybe see if there's any sort of statistics around about how many of those, there must be some sort of thing where there's, 1,000 people a year banned, or whether there's 200 or something. There must be something around, you would think, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether that's actually advertised or released in any particular form. I would think there would be, at any point in time, quite a number, particularly for the large retail chain outlets, that people would be banned from entering. And I know that every so often a magistrate will actually hand down and reiterate the ban when perhaps someone's being released or granted bail. One of the conditions of bail could well be that they're not to enter a particular, it could be numerous stores, of course, but there could be a particular chain of stores. And I know of one recently where a person was granted bail on the basis that they wouldn't engage on either Gumtree or Facebook in any of the buy, sell and swap groups, I suppose. But interestingly enough, that person continued on with their conduct until they were picked up again.
If you can have a look at that for us for next time, please, Peter, and just see if there's any facts. One other thing that I just briefly want to run past you. Do private investigators deliver summonses anymore, on behalf of the police and that?
Wouldn't often be on behalf of the police. The police would do their own summonses, as I understand it. So the actual service of documents was deregulated quite a while ago. Yeah. So in theory, anyone can actually serve documents as long as they're prepared to sign an affidavit to the effect that they've served the documents.
Yep.
So... Yeah. The answer is yes, I still do it from time to time. It's not a big money earner for me by any stretch of the imagination. It's more a service to perhaps a client or a solicitor. Yeah.
All right. So I give you a summons and I say I want you to serve that on Fred Nurk, and he lives at this address. So you lob up, you knock on the door, how do you know it's Fred Nurk? If you say to me, you Fred Nurk, and I say, no, definitely not, how do you know that I'm not lying to you?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So you hopefully the person that's asking you to deliver the summons might have some perhaps a photograph, or they might have be aware of a vehicle. Right. They might also be aware who else might be at the address.
Right.
And there can be, depending on the circumstances, you could possibly serve anyone at the address, providing they're over the age of 18.
Oh, could so you?
Yeah, there are some complications, but I think the other thing that's come out of the pandemic, Alan, is my understanding is that electronic service of summons is something that's becoming more acceptable these days as well.
Is it?
Yeah, so by email, in effect, yeah.
Could you have a look at that? Is there any stats available as to how what percentage are done by email?
I don't know that the percentage would be mentioned, but I am aware that that it can be an acceptable form of document service these days.
Right. So,
can being the operative word, and I suspect it's for certain matters, not all matters.
Yeah. So it is possible. Like if you logged up to my door and I said, you know, I'm not Elman Collier, you could still give me that summons and say, well, you pass on to Alan Collier, and that would be acceptable.
No, it'd probably be more a situation where I'd go, no, I actually know you're Alan Collier. I recognise you from the photograph or from previous dealings or whatever, and I would then insist that you are Alan Collier and serve you the documents, yeah.
Do they have to accept it, or do you have to touch them, or can you just drop it on the floor?
No, they don't have to accept it. And yeah. B, yes, technically, you're if you've touched them with the document, then theoretically they're served, yes.
Fair dinkum.
So that could be as simple as dropping it on their feet.
Fair dinkum. Yeah. It's that's a whole new sort of world, isn't it?
It is, and it's an interesting one. It can be a challenging one, and not necessarily a great paying one as well. So, because if you've got to keep going back three or four times to get them at the right time of day or whatever, it can actually be not very lucrative.
So the ones that you would be called upon to serve would be civil cases, wouldn't they?
No, not necessarily. Probably I would tend to get involved if it was something a bit more serious than that they were actually determined to get the service done.
Yep.
And you may only get one shot at it, and it's quite important that it gets done. So that would probably be more often when I would get called to assist, yeah.
Oh. Pete, look, unfortunately it's time for me to go. I find it always fascinating talking to you. I really do. But thank you for your time again, and what'll be October?
Yes, it'll be October, and the football premiership will be decided by then. So,
who are you following, Peter?
Oh, I'm a Pies man.
All right, great to have you, Peter, and I'll talk to you in a month's time.
All right, thank you, Alan. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, mate. Bye.